Welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Daily Podcast for Wednesday, June 1st, 2016. I'm Jason Powell on ProWrestling.net today. The WWE SmackDown taping spoilers are available, along with John Morse, TNA Impact Wrestling Hit List, and the WWE Raw rating should be available a little bit later today. Plus, we already have an interview with Bill Goldberg that WWE's website ran with him discussing a potential, you know, just the idea of returning to WWE, whether he's whether he has another match left in him, that sort of a thing. An interesting interview with some comments that I included about the history of WWE and Goldberg since he left the company with Shawn Michaels and Triple H at one point, saying that he was not Hall of Fame worthy. Members are going to be hearing the new .NET Weekly audio show on Thursday this week. Jake Barnett will be joining me. He and I will be discussing the brand split and all the news of the week. If you are interested in membership to the ad-free version of ProWrestling.net, visit the main page at ProWrestling.net. Once you're in there, you'll find our three different pricing options. You can get in the door for $7.50 for 1 month. And if you want to save yourself some coin, sign up for 1 year, and you will bring that price down to an average of $5.50 per month. Again, all the details on that available on the main page at ProWrestling.net. If you have any questions, feel free to hit me up on Twitter at ProWrestlingNet. Today on the All Access side, I'm going to be giving you my full review of TNA Impact Wrestling. These reviews are available weekly for .NET members, except for last week when I got so caught up with the WWE roster evaluation that I completely forgot. I had every intention to do it. It's like, oh, man. This week it is available all access, so if you enjoy these, know that we have television reviews available, long-form audio reviews of the major television shows. In fact, Hayden Gleed and Darren Gutteridge will be by on Thursday with the Ring of Honor audio review available exclusively for members. But this was not a great edition of Impact. I just felt like they tried to cram way too many things in here, but it had its moments. And as I've been saying, you know, the first five months of 2016, I think TNA Impact has been a very well-booked show. I think this is the best creative stretch this company has had. I've never been blown away by TNA creatively, and this has just been consistent. And so I kind of considered this an off night creatively, but there were some moments within the show that we'll get to. They opened things up with Dixie Carter telling an unidentified person who had a really nice suit, so it was kind of easy to figure out who it was, that this week's show needs to be all about control. And she spoke about, said she spoke with Billy Corgan, who feels that absolute power corrupts absolutely, but he even reluctantly agreed that for one night the show is all yours, and they didn't show the man. I don't know what happened last week. I mean, she was kind of tying this in somehow, that last week's show was so chaotic that they needed someone to restore order. 2 weeks ago, it was chaotic. You had the closing of the show. They had the lumberjack match, and they didn't get the finish of the Galloway and Lashley match because you had all the lumberjacks getting involved, and they just went with a non-finish there. Last week's show, I have no idea what her character would have been referring to, but I continue to feel that over the years, multiple creative regimes have gone out of their way to make the Dixie Carter character look really stupid. And that's my story. I'm sticking with it. I don't know if it's true, but I still think someday we're going to find out that, oh yeah, yeah, of course we did. And I do have to add, I have no idea why she felt the need to name drop Billy Corgan there. The Miracle, Mike Bennett and Maria headed to the ring for a promo, and Bennett had talked about how he gave Dixie Carter his contact info, but neither he nor Maria are in charge. He called for the person who is in charge to come out. Was not a big shocker. It was EC3 coming out, and he did have the same suit on, so that's good. He informed Bennett that they would be wrestling one another at Slammiversary, so that match is official, despite Bennett trying to weasel out of it. EC3 said he was giving Bennett the night off from wrestling because he wants him to be so pristine when they wrestle that he only feels defeat. He basically doesn't want him to have any excuses. And he had a man, I think he called him Kenny Smith, wheel out a mop bucket, and he talked about how it was Taco Tuesday in catering, so he was going to have Bennett clean toilets. And Maria protested this, but EC3 informed her that TNA management was upset with her because she put her hands on talent last week, and he said he would have a job evaluation with Gail Kim later in the show, and he said they would determine whether she deserves the position. And he says, spoiler alert, you're fired. EC3 said that he was done with them, told him to leave the ring. Bennett refused. EC3 got all worked up and told him to get his ass out of the ring, and Bennett said he was going to go, but only because he wanted to leave. And then the crowd sang the goodbye song at Bennett and Maria as they headed up the stage together. EC3 told them not to forget the bucket, which Bennett then kicked before he headed backstage. Wasn't over yet, though. Lashley comes out and said EC3 keeps sticking his nose in his business, so he was returning the favor. And EC3 said he relegated his power to Drew Galloway, who then made his entrance, and Josh Matthews hyped that the whole pick your poison theme of the show, which I got to say, it doesn't really make sense, because when you pick your poison, you know, you're the one making the choice. The gimmick here is that you are picking your opponent's opponent for the evening, basically, because Galloway and Lashley are going to meet in the Slammiversary main event, and so they got to pick the other's opponent for the evening. Yeah, I mean, the opening segment was fine. The idea of EC3 being in charge for the night felt a little wonky to me. It didn't feel necessary based on the storyline. And I can't say it did a whole lot for me as the show went on, but more on that as we go through. Then we had Bennett and EC3 in a bathroom, and Bennett was selling how disgusting it was and telling EC3 that he can't make him clean toilets. He's a superstar. And then EC3 looked at a bathroom stall and said, "This job is the..." You get it. Ba-dump bump. Drew Galloway stood on the stage, and he said he was up drinking with Lashley's opponent the night before. He said he picked up the tab, but the man would have kicked at Lashley's ass for free. And out comes Bram, who beat Lashley in 6:20 by DQ when basically Lashley just decided he was done with Bram and hit him with a chair. And so, then he beat him up a little bit, set up for another spear, though, after spearing him the first time. And then Drew Galloway came out, ran off Lashley with a chair. And Lashley, who usually is like the biggest badass in TNA, actually ran through the crowd away from Drew Galloway here. I don't know. Bram kind of came out of nowhere, but I think they did it for what came next, because Eli Drake's music played. We're finally finished, I believe, with these god-awful Feaster Fired briefcases. The TNA version of Money in the Bank. WWE, it's bad enough when they have two, when there's a brand split. TNA has four, but they're all for different title belts. And then they also had something for the gold, where Tyrus had a contract. He didn't have a briefcase. I was like, oh my god, you guys. But the second match was Eli Drake pinning Bram to win the little red toy belt that nobody gives a damn about, otherwise known as the King of the Mountain Championship. This happened in about a minute. They did have Bram kick out initially, because Drake just went for the cover right away. But Drake just worked him over and pinned him. So Eli Drake is the King of the Mountain Champion. I'm okay with Drake winning this title because, well, I don't care about the title, and I want to see Bram move on to some other things. The problem with the King of the Mountain title, I don't know what it means. Sometimes they have King of the Mountain matches. Sometimes it's just singles matches. There's really no rhyme or reason for why this title exists. It just was something that they brought back for Jeff Jarrett when he had that brief run with the company, so there's nothing to it. The idea, there's some have said, well, the X Division, there's no limits, and that's a problem too. Keep the X Division for cruiserweights, if you will, whatever you want. You know, you don't have to call them cruiserweights if you don't want to, but have a weight limit, and because if you say there's no limits and you start letting bigger guys compete for that title, well, then it just becomes as pointless and as strange as the King of the Mountain title. Like, well, then why does this title exist? What is it? I just don't get, so the X Division title I'm fine with, obviously, but the King of the Mountain title, I don't know why, other than Dixie must have paid a lot of money for this title belt and insists it be used. I mean, I don't know why they keep this title around. It's been so many different things, but I go off on that on like a damn near weekly basis, so I'll just leave it alone now that I've got that out of my system. Robbie, E, and Jesse were shown at a pool. Robbie is wearing a furry hat and glasses. They're baby faces now, so he gets to try to be cute, funny, and Robbie told Jesse to trust the process, and Raquel showed up and told him that the real key to winning is focus, and then she starts walking around in a bikini while, like, corny music, I guess we're supposed to, ooh, how sexy, it was playing as she was walking around, and then Jesse said he gets it, and Robbie looked confused. I'm confused by the idea of bromance being baby faces. I don't think this is going to work. It looks like they're trying to make them more than just mid-card comedy heels. And when they had the tag titles, it worked fine. They were decent heel tag team champions, and it just, they were pest heels, but they were fine for what they were. Now it's like they're trying to make them mid-card comedy baby faces. I how about you just scrap the comedy and come up with something new, and please get rid of the bromance name. Backstage, Bennett told EC3 that he's a superstar and he doesn't have to clean toilets. Well, Earl Hebner exited one of the toilets, and EC3 asked Hebner if Bennett is a star. Hebner said that he's an asshole, and EC3 told Hebner to learn. EC3 to teach. Or I'm sorry, told. I got it wrong in my report that I wrote last night. He actually told, of course, Bennett to learn respect for the referees, and he told Hebner to get him a referee shirt. So Bennett would end up being a referee, was the idea. I mean, there's a little history here because Bennett pinned, he forced the only TNA Hall of Famer currently on the roster to face him in a match, and of course, it was Earl Hebner. But yeah, I don't know if it was this segment or later in the show, but during one of these bathroom segments, they actually showed EC3 is like standing there. I don't know if it was a cup of coffee or what he had in this cup, but they're spending the whole time. Bennett's acting like he's just grossed out. It smells so bad in there. And EC3 just like casually drinks from his cup. I'm like, oh God, don't bring your cup in the bathroom. Oh dear Lord. That to me was grosser than anything. Any weird, gross poop joke they tried to tell during all these skits. We had a shot of the Hardy family estate in Cameron, North Carolina, and Josh Matthews said that Matt had invited Jeff to sign the TNA Slammiversary contract. And I maybe I misunderstood him, but I'm like, wait, Jeff signed the contract last week. I guess the idea was that it turned out that Jeff had to wanted to or Matt was wanted Jeff to be there t so t in order for him to sign the contract. Not Jeff, but Matt would sign the contract. After a commercial break, Eli Drake was celebrating backstage, acting like he was going to give champagne to various crew members and just kind of being obnoxious. And then he entered a room and told the cameraman that it was a private party for him winning the King of the Mountain championship. By the way, and I like Bram, but do you really want to say the guy's been out drinking all night, then have him get his ass kicked by Bobby Lashley and lose his title? I thought that was a bit odd. And by the way, he wasn't the only person who it turned out had been drinking on TNA Impact. We'll get to that in a little bit. But Matt Hardy was shown striking the crucifix pose outside of his home. He is broken Matt Hardy, so his hair's all over. He looks bad Raven-like, not the good Raven from back in the day, but the kind of the latter-day Raven. He said that he invited Brother Nero, Jeff Hardy, his middle name is Nero, to his personal Armageddon. And then we went to the third match, which was Robbie E and Jesse beating Rockstar Spud and Tyrus. We found out beforehand that number one, Mike Bennett would be the special referee. And EC3 had for some reason determined that the match would be for a shot at the TNA tag titles at Slammiversary. This is really stupid if you think about it. EC3 has issues with Rockstar Spud and Tyrus, and yet he gives him an opportunity with the heel referee to go for the TNA tag titles at Slammiversary if they won the match. Now, granted, they didn't win the match, and you had to assume that they weren't going to because DK are the champions and they are heels. But still, it was like the logic there was really flawed. Robbie and Jesse did have Raquel with them. They hit a heart attack clothesline, and then Spud ended up submitting to a Boston Crab. And Bennett looked like he was reluctantly calling for the bell. The announcers were talking about how long it took him, and I think the idea was that he was hoping that Spud would find a way to get out of it. He didn't want the babyface team, if you will, to win. Backstage, we had Maria venting on the phone to Billy Corgan. Gotta get that name. Billy Corgan worked. He's here. He's with us. She was venting to, and it does, okay, in this case, at least it made a little more sense in Dixie's name dropping, because they have done things on recent television shows with Maria and Billy Corgan, so it's fine. But anyway, she's on the phone with him about EC3 humiliating her husband, and EC3 showed up, took the phone, and said she would have to call him back. And then Maria said that Gail Kim attacked her and asked whether she would be fired or suspended, and EC3 said they would both have to come to the ring, and he would mediate the scenario after the break. And then after that commercial, we saw Jeff Hardy driving his dirt bike on his way to Matt's house. My God, don't take any jumps. Don't do that again. But Jeff flying around pretty good. Nice property out there in good old Cameron, North Carolina, that both Hardys seem to have. Maria, Allie, and Sienna headed to the ring. EC3 was waiting. He dismissed Cien and Allie from the ring, and they stood at ringside. Maria said she was just doing what she felt was right as the leader of the Knockouts division, and he asked if she's been doing a good job, and she said she's been doing a wonderful job. And EC3 said he disagrees, and he called out his friend Gail Kim. And EC3 mentioned that Maria had put her hands on Gail, which is grounds for dismissal. EC3 said that since Gail and Robert Irvine, more name dropping, are friends of his, he wanted to know what she wanted. Gail said that she wants a match with Maria at Slammiversary. So she doesn't want her fired, apparently, just wants a match. And Maria said that she is Kim's leader. EC3 said she's being evaluated. And then he announced Maria against Kim for Slammiversary. Maria said that Slammiversary is going to be the worst night of Kim's life. And she said she would submit herself into the Wrestling Hall of Fame when she kicks Gail Kim's ass. EC3 pointed to Allie and Sienna and said he has no idea who Maria's entourage is, but they were, but Gail Kim was dressed to compete, and then he introduced Jade as Kim's partner, and they went to a commercial. All sorts of weirdness here. So Maria, I guess, keeps her job as the idea, and Gail didn't want. I get this, you know, Gail wants to get her hands on Maria, but how about if she wins, then Maria's out of a job? I still don't know why TNA's weird management decide, you know, in the storyline, decided that they needed a leader of the Knockouts division. I don't know what they're so busy doing that they couldn't oversee this very small division. I do like Maria in the role, and I hope they're not kind of burning through this. Like, it's odd now that that it took them. It was an odd approach to take, but now that they're there, I enjoy her work as the leader of the Knockouts division, and I like what she has going, especially with Allie. I think the artist formerly known as Cherry Bomb is doing a really nice job in that role. But I felt it was too soon to see her wrestle, and that's what we got. Gail Kim and Jade beating Sienna and Allie. EC3 sat at ringside and watched the match along with Maria. By the way, I also didn't care for EC3 acting like he had no idea who Maria's assistants were. You know, he's the biggest guy on the brand. I mean, I don't know. Rock, I guess, would do the same thing, act like he doesn't know certain people. But I don't know. I kind of want EC3 to not be Rock Light. I'd like him to be the guy that, you know, a little more. And Galloway, Drew Galloway serves, he plays this role nicely, but borrow a little bit from that, where I can't imagine Drew Galloway acting like he didn't know who someone was, because the idea is that he just lives this. You know, he's the most passionate guy about pro wrestling in TNA, and you kind of want EC3 to have some of those qualities as well. I know he's a different character. There is a little bit of, he's certainly egomaniacal, even as a babyface, but that was pushing it. It's one thing for his character to not know Allie because she's new. And even that's like, she's been on a couple of times, and I don't know how you miss her. Sienna has been kind of tearing up the Knockouts division, so I didn't really care for the way he just kind of shrugged them off as if he didn't know them. The match, though, I didn't like that they didn't build up to Allie's in-ring debut because she went out there and worked the match in her street clothes. And it just felt too soon. You know, they didn't make anyone really want to see Allie get put in her place, if you will, you know, where she's been snotty to the women she's come in contact with. But, you know, wait on that. Kind of like they've done with Maria. And now you don't need to go do the exact same storyline, but with Maria wrestling at Slammiversary, there's no reason you couldn't have had Allie not wrestle anyone for some time, and just, you know, not play it up like you're trying to get, like someone's trying to get her in the ring. But once Maria gets in the ring, then I guess, you know, you can start to. I would have waited months before even, you know, teasing the idea of Allie getting in the ring. She's just an assistant, and of course she's a trained wrestler, Chaz Cherry Bomb, but that's not the role she's playing in TNA, and that's not the role she played in the match. She was again wearing her street clothes or her business attire, whatever you'd call it, and she was basically, you know, just acting very skittish about being in the ring with Gail Kim and Jade. Jade ended up throwing kicks and a missile drop kick at Sienna and had her pinned. Allie broke that up, but then Jade ended up performing her finisher on Allie and pinning her. And, you know, hey, it's not like I think any damage was done here to the Allie character or anything like that. I just felt like they could have gotten more out of building up to her first match than just kind of within one show with some random order by EC3, you know, just minutes before the match took place. I think the only thing that separated was a commercial break, basically. The other part of this is that Sienna has been tearing through everyone, and I didn't feel like she was very well protected here. I thought with Allie in there, you know, when Sienna was in the match, like, she could have looked strong for her team. But it was all about the baby faces, and Sienna just really didn't get any moments to truly shine here. They went back to Matt's house. Jeff was arriving just as Rebby was leaving with baby Maxel, and she yelled at that Matt had lost his mind and she's done with both of them. And Jeff entered the house where Matt was playing the piano, and he said Brother Nero wants him to sign the contract badly. Jeff yelled at him to sign it, and asked him what he was so afraid of. Matt said it was not the appropriate place, and told Jeff it must end where it all began. And that was the end of this portion of the Matt and Jeff soap opera style saga. By the way, we'll get to it later, but just Lucha Underground inspired, clearly. Matthew said Maria refused to leave ringside. Mike Bennett ranted in the ring about how he is a superstar, not a referee or a janitor. And Bennett said his wife isn't a wrestler. Bennett said he is a wrestler and he's the best damn wrestler in the world. He said it's over as far as what he was being forced to do. EC3 brought up giving Bennett the night off earlier in the show as far as being a wrestler, and then said he's also a pathological liar. He said it would be a miracle if Bennett's opponent showed up so more TNA babyface drinking. Woohoo! James Storm made his entrance and then chased Maria while driving the Boozer Cruiser, and they went to a break. When they came back, we had Mike Bennett beating James Storm. This happened because of kind of a distraction finish and not a very good one. Distraction finishes are overdone in wrestling, clearly, but some are done better than others. And this one, you just had Maria climbing onto the apron with a beer bottle. And Storm didn't like that. Or maybe his character is such an alcoholic that he just felt compelled to take it. I don't know. But she slapped him, and then Bennett rolled up Storm for the win. It was like, this is, again, some distraction finishes are better than others. I don't like it when the baby face looks like a dope. And that's kind of how I felt Storm came off here. And then Pope was quick to remind viewers, and I like this, that Bennett is still undefeated. I hadn't even been thinking about it. So they need to start driving that home, especially heading into his match with EC3, who was they build him as being undefeated, even though he lost that match to Matt Hardy, but I guess doesn't count because of the whole TNA World Title Series. That's what set that all up, was a controversy surrounding that. So I guess they went back to just billing him as undefeated. But Bennett actually ended that streak. He was the first man to pin him, according to the TNA storyline, their version of history. And now Bennett is that guy. So, EC3 has a chance to be the first guy to pin Mike Bennett in TNA. And so, yeah, they should be playing that up. EC3 stood on the stage and he said, the games are over. And he called, he said, Bennett calls himself God, but he is the devil. And he said, I'm coming to your church, God, and we'll punch God in the mouth and then burn that bitch down. And he says, but I'll leave you with this. A kick to the face, and then Bennett turned around and ended up taking a last call super kick from James Storm, and they went to a commercial. So Storm got a little bit back, even though he looked like a dope in the finish, unfortunately. At least he got to deliver that. He kind of got the last lap in this. After the commercial break, we got a video package for the Tribunal, who are former NXT wrestlers. You'll know them better as Marcus Louis and Sylvester Laforte. Al Snow stood in the ring and said he knew that fans were thankful for what he was doing for pro wrestling. He was really healing it up here, and then he introduced his Tribunal, and they're going by Basile Baraka, that's Sylvester Laforte's new name, and Baron Dax, which is Marcus Louis' new name. Snow said he was taking the steering wheel away from the fans and putting it back in the hands of quality athletes like the Tribunal, and Dax said they fight for Snow. Baraka said that they will bring a true reign of terror. And some fans were already giving them the what treatment. And Snow said they don't need to rely on weapons or gimmicks, unlike Grado, that big bag of suck. And he said it took one move to beat Grado. And then he had the finish of their match replayed. Grado comes out with Mahabali Shera. Grado's all pissed off, calling Al Snow a liar for saying he didn't use weapons. And Grado said, at least I'm honest. I admit that I use weapons. And then they ended up showing additional match footage that included the Tribunal interfering and Snow using a trash can lid before performing his finisher on Grado. Snow, I thought this was great. This was a throwback to what I grew up on. This one line made me think of have flashbacks to territory days. You're a liar. Your parents are liar. And it wasn't that. He accused him of doctoring the tape. That sounds like something Bobby Heenan would say. Snow said that Grado's mom loves him. And Grado and Shearer then ran to the ring. Grado, you can say a lot of things, but don't bring Grado's mom into it. They fought with the Tribunal. Snow ended up striking Grado and Shearer from behind with a chair, and then the Tribunal worked over Grado and Shearer. So it's undercard stuff. Is there really heat in being from France? I don't know. I mean, that's kind of the gimmick here. I mean, they have like, I think the French flag on their gear, and it's not like they're talking all about rah-rah France or anything like that. But we'll see. I mean, it just feels like it's an undercard thing, which is in a Grado's just a comedy guy. Shearer certainly belongs on the undercard of anywhere. And but Snow's doing a really good job. I look forward to these segments because of Snow's kind of old school throwback heel mic work. It's simple, but it's effective and it's a lot of fun. After commercial break, we saw footage of Braxton Sutter arriving at the Impact Zone. I don't know if the idea is that he is a member of hockey's storied Sutter family, but I'm guessing that's not the case. He is Pepper Parks. That was his former name. He is actually married to Allie, aka Cherry Bomb, but that is not being acknowledged yet. I like this. He was acting like basically he was shown getting to the building and doing a quick meet and greet with TNA officials and then sitting down for an interview. And he said that the day that he was offered his TNA contract was one of the best days of his life. And they showed pictures of him from his independent days, did not acknowledge the Pepper Parks name. And he spoke about how he didn't work this hard to get to TNA to be mediocre. He talked about how he wants to be champion and now the real work begins. And the idea is that he got his, well, they even said it, he got his break late in the game. And so they're acknowledging that here's this veteran guy who's just now getting his first real chance. Of course, you can't bring up Pepper Parks because he had a chance as Pepper, and I hope they don't. I hope they don't make that mistake. I'd say, I've liked this guy's work. Never liked the name Pepper Parks. I just didn't fit him. I'm like, Pepper Parks? What? For this guy? So I welcome the name change, and I like what I like the idea of this. It's not just all here's another rookie. We see enough of those stories, especially in TNA these days, because they've brought in so many different people. Not that they're really, I guess they're not really playing it up, but you see so much young talent that I like that someone in wrestling is actually acknowledging that they're older. That doesn't happen very often in wrestling. And so it seems like a simple enough storyline, but you just don't see it told. And so I like this. This was, it was brief, but it was cool. Only problem is, by the time the show was over, even though this happened so late, it was they'd thrown so many things at me that I didn't know if anything was really going to stick. Footage aired of Matt talking to his brother Jeff in the giant shed behind Matt's house, and inside the shed was a wrestling ring. And Matt said that's where it started. That's the ring it started in, and it would end in. Then they cut to Drew Galloway making his entrance for the main event. Lashley walked onto the stage and asked Galloway if he was ready to get his ass kicked, and he introduced DK as Lashley's or as Galloway's opponent for the evening. And Matthews, I thought he played this nicely. John Moore in his hit list didn't like the way that that Matthews played this. I thought he did it right by going, okay, well, who from DK? Because you're not supposed to automatically assume that all of Decay gets to face him. There should be kind of that moment where it's like, okay, now it's Decay, but which one of them? And then you have the outrage moment of, what do you mean it's all three? And Pope was assuming it was going to be Abyss. And then all of a sudden he started pointing out that Lashley said Decay and questioned whether Galloway would have to face all three, not men, because Rosemary's part of it, but all three members of the group. And they went to a commercial, and when they came back, EC3 came out and said, of course you're not going to be able to. That's stupid. Oh, wait, no, he didn't. They went through with this. Even dumber, Drew Galloway defeated Abyss, Crazy Steve, and Rosemary in a handicap match. The TNA Tag Team Champions, the Badass Decay Group, beaten single-handedly. They even had help. They even had help from Lashley. Granted, his help backfired and he speared Abyss, and then Galloway clotheslined Lashley to ringside and caught Crazy Steve with a Claymore kick and a Future Shock DDT and pinned him. So it wasn't even like the interference backfired in a way where, oh, well, if Lashley hadn't have done that, Decay was going to win. No, it wasn't like Abyss was pinned coming off the spear or something. No, it would. The TNA champion beat three members of the three-person tag team championship act. Why? Why? I just don't understand this. I guess I get the idea that if there's some loophole where I get the basic story that Lashley took advantage of this. I think there should have been a moment where they showed EC3 objecting to this backstage, but at the same time just saying, my hands are tied. I apparently th this is due to the wording of the contract, this is actually legal, and I think it's ridiculous, but there's nothing I can do about it. Something like that. So EC3 just doesn't look like a complete douchebag, and it makes TNA management look stupid again, which seems to be the ongoing theme of TNA Impact Wrestling. But yeah, I just hated the idea. I just despised the idea of Drew Galloway meeting the tag team champions all by himself, even when the tag team champions also had. It's not like somebody came out to help Drew Galloway. He basically fought off four people by himself to get this win. Why? Decay should be tearing through opponents, not losing handicap matches. This is. I know Dave Lagana worked with Vince McMahon, and this is something that we've criticized WWE for doing. It feels like a million times. It hasn't been that many, but it feels like it because it's so painful, and they feed their tag teams to singles wrestlers and handicap matches, especially when it's a tag team champions, for God's sake. So I don't know if this was something that Dave learned from sitting at the at the WWE creative table. For all I know, he hated this finish, but I just couldn't. I just sat there shaking my head, going, "Why would you do this? This is awful." Now, from there, this wasn't the end of the show. They went back to the Hardy saga. Matt brought the contract to a table that was set up next to the ring. It wasn't like a traditional bingo hall table or wrestling table, if you will. But anyway, he set it next to the ring, and then he signed it. And then he had invited Ma Jeff invited Matt to finish it where it started by having their match in the ring rather than waiting for Slammiversary. And Rebby then entered the barn, and she throws the baby at Jeff. My God, thank God Jeff can catch. Oh, it's just a doll. She did not throw an infant or a toddler. She did not throw her own toddler at his uncle. It was a doll. And Matt, Jeff yelled something at her. I don't even remember what. And then Matt used a distraction to slam a bottle over the head, over the back of Jeff's head, and then told Jeff that he told him it was over. And he slammed Jeff off the ring apron and through the table that they had used for the contract signing. Not even through it, just it tipped over. It looked good. And then Matt stood up and said, "Brother Nero is over. Done." And that's how the show ended. Okay, I'm not a fan of broken Matt Hardy if it's a long-term thing. Last week, I made the comment in my report that it's one of those things where if somebody that doesn't watch wrestling walks into the room, you're going to be kind of embarrassed that this is actually playing. But I thought he did a better job with it this week. I don't know if he's just kind of finding the voice for it compared to what he did the first week. I'm not quite sure. But the thing that it worked in the sense that if Big Money Matt and Jeff do this kind of weird Lucha Underground inspired thing with the same tone, it's not going to work. And I don't think they would. I think the tone works because it's broken Matt Hardy. He's pulling the strings here, manipulating Jeff into this situation. So it was definitely like it felt like low budget. I think John used that description as well. Low budget. John Moore, who does the Impact Wrestling hit list, so you can read on the main page at ProWrestling.net. It felt like kind of low budget telenovela, low budget by Lucha Underground style. It's not something I want to see TNA start doing on a regular basis. But the Matt Hardy character is campy enough that this campy video worked for me. It kept me interested in the show. It just it you know if I'm on the verge of turning the channel, they may have dragged it out a little bit. I may have just given up. But at the same time, I felt like it was kind of a nice hook where you're just you keep seeing bits and pieces of it. Matt Hardy doing a better job with the character, and the always likable Jeff Hardy being manipulated by his brother. It's still not as good to me as Big Money Matt Hardy, that's for sure. I like Big Money Matt. I hope this whole thing is just him manipulating his brother, playing this character as a head game or something, and then coming out of Slammiversary, he maybe beats Jeff at Slammiversary, and then coming out of it, we get Big Money Matt laughing about the way he manipulated his brother along with Robbie, because there's just too many good things. That character didn't last long, and this is not the direction that I want to see see Matt Hardy go in long term. But if it's a short term thing, just kind of set for, you know, this stretch going to Slammiversary, I'm okay with it. And I was okay with, I do have a feeling that, you know, this, the whole telenovela style approach they took here, I think there's going to be conflicting viewpoints on this, and I understand why. You know, it's just, I can see why if somebody would just be shaking their head at this, going, this is bad TV, whatever. But I think that it was, you know, it just worked for me. There was something about it where, again, I wouldn't want to see more of this, but for one night, it was different. It was unique. You know, it's just, it clicked. It, again, in part because of the campy tone of the Matt Hardy character, it just kind of set the pace for the campiness of this video package. And so, as far as Slammiversary is concerned, we know now it'll be officially EC3 and Mike Bennett. We have Matt Hardy against Jeff Hardy. Did they say Full Metal Mayhem for that? I believe it is. And then you also have, looks like Decay will be defending the tag titles against Abyss, or not Abyss, against Abyss is part of Decay, against Bromance. That doesn't do much for me. And on top is, oh, and also Gail Kim and Maria. And then on top, it will be Lashley challenging Drew Galloway in a match that can only be won by submission or knockout. And I think they need to play that aspect up here as we move closer here to the, as we get closer to the actual Slammiversary show. That was something that was kind of missing from this show. So not a great night for TNA. It just kind of felt like one of those overbooked shows. But, you know, I continue to tell people, watch the show. I don't care, you know, if you're pissed off at TNA from the past or whatever, you're missing out on some good stuff. There are many weeks where TNA Impact Wrestling, I find it to be the most entertaining show of the week. As I want to be fair and say that I'm still way behind on Lucha Underground, so I can't compare that, but I do find it oftentimes to be more entertaining than Raw, SmackDown, NXT, the weekly NXT television show, Ring of Honor. I don't know that I will be saying that at the end of this week necessarily, but a lot of weeks it has been, and so you're missing out. I would definitely recommend, despite all the frustrations with TNA management you may have, whatever the case is, you're missing out on a good television show. So check it out Tuesday nights on Pop TV. But that is going to do it for today. Before I go, hey, please take a moment to subscribe to this daily podcast. Rate and review us on iTunes if you have a chance. And hey, whenever I send out a tweet to the All Access Audio, the free audio tweet that I put out there, if you could take a moment to retweet it, that is always appreciated too. Anything you can do to help spread the word about this podcast, about ProWrestling.net, it is always very helpful. And a big thank you to everyone who has already taken a moment to do one or more of those things. But that will do it for me. I will be back Friday, I think is the plan. Tomorrow, you're going to get Zach Zimmerman breaking down the go-home show for the NXT TakeOver special. He will be by in this slot. And like I said, I think I'll be by on Friday. But tomorrow, I'll be by exclusively for members with the .NET Weekly Audio Show. So until next time, thank you so much for listening. Take care.